This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. You know what Monday means. Monday means the start of a work week, a lot to recap from the weekend, but most importantly, it means EJ Raddick from the NHL Network. Aww. NHL Now from 4 to 6 Eastern, occasionally from 6 to 4.
That's right. If we are in the mood to do a long show.
What's up, brother?
Another week begins. We're into November now. I mean, just one thing after another. We've had all these kind of crazy, great goals.
I know.
Every night it seems like there's another, you know, what we've kind of called goal of the year type candidates. And some teams have been really impressive and off to good starts. Other teams are really struggling. So, it's been an interesting first month for sure. It's kind of a changing of the guard over the last, like a slow changing over the last couple of years, because you can remember not too long ago, Chicago, L.A., Anaheim were like really top teams in the West 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Right.
And now, you know, Anaheim is rebuilding and actually off to a pretty good start, but L.A. and Chicago are really struggling. And, you know, teams like Vancouver and Arizona are playing better now. And so it's definitely changing times in the National Hockey League.
But let's start with the goals, specifically the Svechnikov goal, which we were told, I think it was told to us. I mean, a lot of time has gone by since we did NHL Live together. But yes. I remember Brendan Shanahan saying this. I don't know if he said it to us or maybe he said it to somebody else and we discussed it on the air. When Legg did that for Michigan, do you remember Brendan Shanahan saying, oh, that'll never happen in the NHL. We wouldn't allow it. If he did it, you know, we would kill him afterward, you know, like that baseball mentality of you don't do that in the NHL, you know, and now I have this feeling that once everybody kind of gets to know it, we're going to see a lot more of that stuff.
Yeah, I can tell you this, Donnie, being at rinks and coaching my son's team and being around and seeing a lot of these young players and just obviously following the young players that have come into the National Hockey League is like we just have a high end level of skill, and their skills coaches now, and these kids, that's what they do in practice.
Like, I know.
Downtime. They're picking up pucks. They're trying to do all kinds of little tricks and everything. So I think you're going to see more and more of it. The between your leg shot is becoming kind of another trick that guys have in their bag, that when it's appropriate to try to do that, to change the angle on a shot, they do it. And the same thing with that lacrosse style goal. So I think, we've definitely moved into a different era there, and we're going to see more and more of it.
Yeah, and then the Tkachuk goal. In a wild game, I was in Nashville Saturday, and they were still talking about, you know, blowing that lead. And the thing about it is Nashville's been unbelievable in the third period, plus 11 goal differential, including what happened on Thursday, scored 26 goals in the third, and yet they blow a 4-1 lead, but all anybody could talk about was the Tkachuk goal. And you know Pete Weber, a longtime announcer everywhere, Buffalo, and now with Nashville, and I asked him, first of all, I asked him, did he notice immediately? Because when I was watching it on television, I wasn't sure how the puck was shot. And then you see several replays, you figure it out. And he said, he noticed it because he had tried it earlier in the game.
So, he did in the second period. He absolutely did.
Right. So it's just amazing. You're right. The skill and Lundqvist even mentioned it when he was asked about it, that these guys they're doing it in practice. They're trying it in practice and
all the time.
And there's more room now too to execute a lot of those plays and good for the league. I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the skill level is really, really high. And, I can remember the first time I saw it in the game was when it wasn't in the game, it was in a shootout. It was Malik doing it in that shootout, that crazy, memorable, wild shootout. The first year we had shootouts with the Capitals and Rangers on a Thanksgiving weekend. I think it was a Saturday night at the Garden.
Yep.
Crazy, crazy game. And I remember when I was live at that, and I saw it, and I said, something looked odd about that. And I had to watch the replay, and then I was like, now I get it. And then after that, we'd see it from occasionally in shootouts, but now we're seeing it more in gameplay, and it's great. I think it's great stuff. I love seeing the skill.
We talked a little bit about the Islanders last week, but it's still pertinent. I mean, the team just continues to win 9 straight. They got Ottawa coming up, so a very good chance of making it 10 in a row. And I talked to somebody who's around the Islanders who said that he thinks they've been outplayed in half the games, but they still find a way to win those games. So we always bring this up in conversation about Buffalo's 10-game winning streak last year, and it didn't mean anything. Buffalo didn't come close. But this seems a little different. You might be seeing more of it than I have, because with this wacky NHL schedule, it seems like the Islanders play every time the Rangers do. So it's sometimes difficult for me to watch every second. But is there something like happening with this team that you feel good about? Is it just, hey, one of those things? I mean, what do you take from this 9-game winning streak?
Well, I think they are exactly who they are, right? We saw it last year. Barry Trotz put together, you know, this group and the commitment to playing in their own end and a commitment to being good in the neutral zone and dumping pucks and then retrieving pucks. That's the thing. I mean, it's one thing to play a dump and chase game. It's another thing to retrieve. And I believe the Islanders are high on the list of teams that dump the puck, and they're very high on the statistic of retrieval of pucks. So they're very, very, like I said, they are what they are. They play the way they want to play. They make it hard for you to play against them. They don't give you a lot of offensive chances in the game. Their goaltenders are able to handle most of the first-shot opportunities. Barry Trotz only has two guys playing over 20 minutes a night on his team, and it's Ryan Pulock and Adam Pellich, and those guys are up over 21 minutes. Everybody else is, you know, kind of in that window of, 17, 18, 19, 16. I mean, you go through it. So it's very much a team effort, and, we'll see over the course of time. But they did it last year, and with relatively the same cast of characters and with some newer players that are – or some players that are maturing and getting better. So I don't see any reason why they won't continue to be, barring any kind of significant injury issues, right in the mix again of doing what they're doing. I think they've proven in month one that, they are going to be the same stubborn, hard-to-play-against team they were last year.
Going in an opposite direction is Tampa, and I think we might have discussed it earlier about I wouldn't expect a lot from Tampa that we saw last year, right? I wouldn't be surprised if there's a team that kind of just muddles through the regular season. They know how good they are, and then when they get to the playoffs, they'll kind of flip it on. But they just don't seem right to me. I saw them live against the Rangers. They lost that game. They were fortunate to come back and beat the Devils. We'll get into that in just a second, then lose to the Islanders. I don't know. Just something seems to be missing there. Is it just complacency? Is it I just don't want to kill myself in October because I know I'm going to be there at the end? Or is there some legitimate concerns that Cooper should have with this team?
I don't think that there are really any. I don't think there are really any concerns. I mean, I would say this. I don't think it's complacency. That's really what I mean to say. It's not complacency. What I think it really is for them is they're trying to figure out what their identity needs to be to have more success in the postseason. So, as they go through this first month of the year, there's a little bit of a hangover, a little bit of a sting for what happened to them last spring, like we saw. I think with the Washington Capitals a couple of years ago, and actually in the season they won the Stanley Cup. You remember they lost to the Penguins in consecutive seasons, and they were, that first month with the Washington Capitals, the year they won the Stanley Cup, wasn't very good.
You're right.
And you go back into November, I think they had a set of road games in Nashville and in Colorado where they lost decisively in both games, and there was a lot of talk that Barry Trotz was going to be fired at that time, and they eventually kind of figured it out, and, the rest is history, as they say. So I think the Tampa Bay Lightning are missing some guys from last year. Ryan Callahan didn't play a lot, but he was around the team a lot. Dan Girardi, I mean, these are, guys who were a presence for them. So they've changed over some of the personnel, and I think they're just trying to figure out how they have to play and who they are. I think we just talked about the Islanders. The Islanders know exactly who they are and how they have to play. The Tampa Bay Lightning played a certain way last year. In the end, it didn't work out for them, and I think they're trying to figure out what they have to be different, how they have to be different this year. And remember as well, like, Victor Hedman is a big piece of this because he was injured at the end of last year, and then he played two playoff games, and he was clearly not 100% healthy, and then he did not play the last two games of that sweep against the Jackets. Now, he's been out again over the last couple of games, and they've struggled more. So, any team that loses their top end, an elite defenseman like Hedman changes their lineup. So that's kind of how I see it, Donnie. I just think that This is a team that's really searching, having a little bit of a hangover from last year, and trying to figure out like how they have to play and what they have to do to get to that ultimate spot. And the Capitals were able to figure it out. We'll have to see if the Tampa Bay Lightning can figure it out because there's no guarantee.
Man, it doesn't look like Hedman's going to go to Sweden for that pair of games against the Buffalo Sabres.
He's there, but he's not practicing.
Right. Well, he should be there. I think it helps that he is there. It just stinks that if he isn't able to play.
Yeah, but we don't know if he's going to play.
Now, we've had this conversation numerous times. What's the end game here for playing these games in Europe? You saw the game in the Czech Republic between Chicago and Philadelphia to start the year, which was just the one game. At least here you got two. You hear rumors about a global division and all that. I mean, all sports are doing it. Is it just a money grab? When I don't mean that negatively. I'm not saying that to disparage the idea. There's nothing wrong with money. I mean, that you want to make money as a league. You get that. But
I'm constantly trying to have money.
I'm grabbing money every chance I get. So that sometimes is a negative term, but I don't mean it that way, but just lack of a better phrase. Is it just purely financial? Or is there an end game to where, because it's such a global sport, where you may one day see a division in Europe, or will we see a television package put together like what the NFL's trying to do? Will there be a certain series of games and a certain network will get that? I mean, if you're around the league, is it just, you know, throwing out a fishing line to see what kind of cash you can hook up with, or is there an end game to going to Stockholm, going to Finland, going to Sweden, going to Czech Republic and all that?
Yeah. Well, I think that the game is global, and I think there's a big audience for an appetite for NHL hockey there, and I think that they are trying to continue to grow that and trying to see if there's more value there and more revenue for them to mine out of these particular places. So I don't think there's some people who've talked about the idea of playing this European division or having teams based out of there. I think we're a long, long way away from something like that. So I've never been I haven't felt there's a big appetite for that. But I do think that the league likes to have a presence, albeit even for a couple of games over in Europe and in Scandinavia, where the hockey is very popular and there's an appetite for it. I think, we saw the league go over to China last year, and the Olympics in 2022, I believe, are going to be in China. So that's another possible place for the league to try to, there's just the population is, immense, obviously, over there. So, I think that they're constantly looking at ways to get the game into different places and to grow it where they can and to make money. I mean, that's at the end of the day, sure, everybody wants to make money and add revenue and add value to things. So, that's been going on for a while, and I think that's going to continue to be, you're going to continue to see these kind of games crop up, a couple of games. What is it, three games this year, the one real game in Prague, and then these two games. So I just think we're going to continue to see it because there's a value for it for the league.
St. Louis, a great start to the season when you think about it, right? First place in the Central Division, 9-3-3. Not the greatest of starts, but playing much better recently. Over the last 10, they won four in a row. They're playing well, and they're doing it without Tarasenko, who effectively is going to be out for the rest of the regular season. So a lot of rumors persist. Would the Rangers be interested in trading Kreider there? Would the Devils trade Hall there if they decide they can't get a contract done? Hall had some disparaging things to say about the fans who were booing the power play in that game against Tampa. So are they interested, St. Louis, in replacing Tarasenko? Do they think they can maybe survive without him until he comes back, or are they going to be interested in trying to replace him in the regular season?
Well, I think I think they're going to just wait and see where they're at. I mean, if they continue to play well and win games, I don't think that they're going to be in any rush to change that. They will benefit from, Tarasenko's number being on the long-term injury. It's all like Patrick Kane with the Blackhawks several years back, and either I think it was in 13, or it might have been in 15, one of the years they won the Cup, where he got hurt late in the season, and it opened up some cap space for the Hawks, and they were able to go out and make a few additions to their roster based on that, because your cap really is not impacted in the postseason. So, that's a kind of a loophole that the Blues could take advantage of and add a Kreider or a Hall or whoever. But, it's still, they're pretty well, they are pretty well capped out. They've got to worry about moving forward, Petrangelo's situation. His contract is coming to an end. Even if you bring somebody in, I guess there's certain tagging rules going forward. So it would have to probably be an expiring contract like the ones you mentioned. But I think Doug Armstrong will just kind of watch his team, and if he feels his team needs that addition, he'll make it. And if he feels that the team is kind of humming along and doing okay, then he probably won't. I mean, it's going to be more opportunity for, maybe somebody like Robert Thomas to move up in the lineup a little bit more. Zach Sanford played very well in the playoffs last year. They've got some other young guys they like. Robbie Fabry has had a lot of injury issues over the years. Maybe more opportunity for him. So Sammy Blay had a really pretty good season last year. So they've got some young players that they can move up their lineup. And I think Doug Armstrong will just, he'll watch, and if he feels that they need that boost and they can afford to make that move, they'll do it.
All right, let's talk about the Devils situation. That was a really, really tough loss against Tampa. You score six goals at home. You know, you got to win that game.
Should win.
And, you know, it's all the earmarks. And I'm with you. It's easy to blame the coach. John Hines stinks, fire him, all that. But there are some little tiny marks that I think hurt him. Goals late in periods happens all the time. Goals late in games. There's a lot of things just going wrong for this team, but I keep circling back to the goaltending. It's been bad. They pick up Louis Domingue for a seventh-round conditional pick, so I mean they add him to the mix, I guess. But what do you do with Corey Schneider? He's got a couple of years left on his contract, $6 million each year. That ended up not being a good deal that Lou Lamoriello made. I mean, I don't know if they would have taken Horvat at ninth overall, but he's a star and a captain of the Canucks, and the Devils have a goaltender that just – whether it's health or just ineffectiveness, has not lived up to the money that he's supposed to make, and they just have bad goaltending right now.
Yeah, it's been interesting how Corey Schneider's career has unfolded because he, you know, a couple of years back when they signed him, remember the year that they kind of they were not very good? They were in the McDavid contract year, and if it hadn't have been for Corey Schneider playing very well, the Devils may well have finished at the bottom of the league and had a great opportunity to be in that lottery for McDavid, Eichel, and move up a little bit. They ended up, I think, sixth overall where they picked Zach, if my memory serves me correctly. So, you know, he was a very good goaltender for this team early on. And then, you know, as time has gone on, he's had some injury issues, and he just has not been able to really consistently find his game. He's 33 years of age now. He's got three more years left on his contract at $6 million per. I mean, it's not a guy you – it's not someone that you can move when they're – save percentage is, you know, below sub 850. I mean, that's just not very good. The team has not played great in front of either goalie, and the goalies have not bailed these guys out on a lot of occasions. I mean, I think both Schneider and Blackwood have had flashes where they've played well, but there have been a lot of breakdowns in front of them, and those guys have not been able to, you know, to rise above and to, you know, to be able to make a difference. So, it's a great question for the Devils. I mean, they went out and got Domingue. I mean, we've talked about Louis Domingue before. I think he's the backup goalie at best. And so I don't know if that's the answer, but at least it gives them another guy that's played NHL games in their system that they could call upon if they need to. And if there's some issue with Corey where he needs more time out and, you know, may have an injury issue, who knows? At least they have another body they can bring in there. But, you know, these are all the things that an organization has to do, but they have to try to draft and develop goalies or sign them as free agents. I mean, I know that's a thing that I would be focused on is to try to sign goalies who don't get drafted because you can take shots at a lot of different guys from all different places all over the globe, and you only have to have one hit. I mean, Henrik Lundqvist was a seventh round pick. There are other goalies that you can go and look around that weren't even drafted that have made their way to the National Hockey League and are quite good. So, I think there has to be. I'm sure there is an emphasis with Ray Shero and his group that, hey, we have to improve this area of our organization. And, you know, they go out and, like I said, they trade for Domingue. He's a guy that's played NHL games. I'm sure they're trying to figure out other ways to stockpile goaltenders in their organization and hope that, you know, that they're going to have those guys are going to filter up and have an opportunity to compete for the job at the NHL level.
Yeah, and I wouldn't read too much into Hall's comments with the fans. I think whether he stays or goes, first of all, is going to determine on where the Devils are at the trade deadline, right, and how they feel the negotiations are going. But for Hall, I would just think it's making sure that the team is moving in the right direction, right? I mean, because he was in Edmonton, and that team didn't make the playoffs the time that he was there. And, you know, now he's with the Devils. I'm sure he wants to go someplace where he's got a chance to win. If he feels like the Devils are moving in the right direction, I think they got a chance to re-sign him. I wouldn't read too much into his comments about the fans. Fans are going to boo. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be any logic behind it. He's like, why are they booing our power play? We already scored a power play goal. Well, you know what? This is what fans do. They boo you. Yeah. They're going to boo Subban. I mean, already a guy that I really like, and he says he listens to the podcast, Jody Shelley, already getting on Subban, that maybe he needs to focus more on the ice instead of all the things that are going off the ice. This is classic underachieving. When there's a lot expected of a team and they underachieve, there's going to be targets on your back. That's just professional sports. Yeah.
Absolutely, and I think you got to remember when he said it, he was coming off a game where they scored six goals and lost on home ice. So it was a frustrating time, and the Devils have lost several games in that fashion. So
several, yes,
of that frustration that builds. So, you know, I go back to the Taylor Hall thing. He's in a tough spot right now. He was coming off. I mean, and I think both sides were in a tough spot. I mean, I've said to you many, many times, Don, I mean, I'm a big believer with the guy in the last year of his contract. You try to get that done in the summer. You make your best offer. And if the guy's hesitant or resident, or just hesitant to do it, then you maybe seek a trade, because you have a lot more suitors in the summer before people get capped out. And you can make maybe a better deal. However, in this case, Hall was coming off injury, so who knows if that affected his value. You'd like to keep him if you can, but, also, do I have to pay max dollars in terms to keep him? Do I got to pay him 8 times 11 just to keep him?
Right.
And that's a contract that could come back to haunt you, particularly
sure.
when you have good young players, you know, moving up your lineup behind him. So, you know, for me, it's a really tough one. If you ask me right now, I would think that he's probably going to get moved at some point, because I don't think they're going to hold on to him if they're out of the playoff situation and he isn't signed. But, you know, hard to look into that crystal ball and see exactly where he would fit. And obviously in Taylor's case, he's looking at the long term as well. We remember Mark Stone's situation last year, that he was traded from Ottawa and then he immediately signed a long-term deal with the Vegas Golden Knights. So I'd be interested to see if somebody would try to do something along those lines to get Taylor Hall. But, you know, the cap is a major consideration.
No, it is.
You know, and he has had a few injury issues, and I would tell you, I can't imagine him having a better year than he had 2 years ago. So, you know, I just don't know how teams feel about, you know, even really good wingers that are, you know, 28, 29, and then signing on for 7 or 8 years. It's a pretty tough, contract. I mean, you got to be in a position to be able to win now with a contract like that.
I got so many good tweets. You ready?
All right, let's go.
All right. Chris brought up to me, who do you think's better, Richter or Lundqvist? And it's tough not to say Lundqvist. He's compiled way more wins than Richter, but I thought Richter was as good a money goaltender as I can remember for a team that maybe wasn't that great at times. That 97 team should have never went to the conference final. I saw him steal series. Maybe I'm bitter because a lot of that was against the team I was rooting for, the Devils, but I thought he was fabulous. Chris asks, why isn't Richter in the Hall of Fame? He has the numbers, but do you think the Rangers' decline and lack of playoff success after 94 hurts his chances?
You know, goalies are weird when it comes to the Hall of Fame. You know, when you look at it, there are a lot of goalies who've compiled some great numbers who aren't in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, I think, you know, I try to figure out where a guy was in his era. And Mike Richter was a pretty high-end guy
yeah.
in his era, for most of his era. And I think he's probably deserving of that honor. But again, you know, the Hockey Hall of Fame, it's, you know, my biggest issue with it. There's no transparency. You don't really know who's pushing for who. It depends on the committee. There's 19 members, and it's all closed doors, and nobody says anything about it after it's discussed internally. So I like to see a more transparent process and to know, like, a little bit more of why guys get in and why other guys don't. But, you know, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon, despite me railing about it every chance I get. So, you know, we'll see. But Mike Richter was one hell of a goaltender, and he was part of a championship team, and he was
yeah.
part of an international team that had success as well in 96 at the World Cup of Hockey. So, you know, I think he would certainly be a candidate worth some very serious discussion.
I do think there is sometimes a big market bias. So what I mean by that is sometimes it happens to the award. Sometimes it happens for the Hall of Fame. It's, oh, Richter's a good goaltender, but look at that Ranger team. Look at all the stars they had. Look at all the money they were able to spend to bring players in. And sometimes I think we don't appreciate the championships in New York. I think it happens with the Yankees a lot of times. You certainly see it happen in basketball, where it's, oh, yeah, he's a good player, but look at the team he was on, and look at the money that their owners were able to throw at. And sometimes you just don't appreciate the individual moments there, you know. And I think with all the star power and all the money that the Rangers put in to that 94 team, it just took a goaltender to still steal games and win, right? With all the players yeah. that they had on that team, with Messier's guarantee, does Messier's guarantee do anything if Richter's not standing on his head keeping that game 2-0? Deep into the second period? You know, those are the things that you should appreciate more.
Yeah, when you watch that game, if you ever watch a tape of it, I mean, Mike Richter was outstanding, and that, the Rangers could have been easily down 4 or 5 nothing, and that would have been over. So he was outstanding, and he was outstanding in big moments, and he helped them win a Stanley Cup. And, you know, for me, like I said, I think that he's somebody that deserves some significant consideration. He had over 300 wins in his career. He had significant playoff accomplishments, and, you know, he was a heck of a goalie, and if he didn't get hurt, he might have played even a little longer. So, that's just kind of the way it rolls. But again, I would tell you that when it comes to the Hall of Fame goalies, it's kind of a little bit of a different criteria for whatever reason. And but we don't know because we don't hear about it.
That's true.
It's not a transparent process.
It's so stupid. Aaron asks, what is Jesse Puljujarvi's realistic value if Edmonton wants picks, prospects, and what would his value be if they want a ready-made NHL player? They need help at every position to fill a roster around McDavid and Draisaitl.
Well, I think that, you know, the bad news for people who want to steal Puljujarvi out of there is that Kenny Holland is a real savvy general manager. He's been around a long time. He knows exactly where he fits in terms of the you know, the leverage points that he has with that player and the player has with him. The player's gone overseas to play. I think they're monitoring his progress. I think if somebody came up with an offer that was a valuable player or somebody that they felt was on par with the potential of this young guy, then they would make a move. But I think, you know, Kenny's got a good grip on it, and they're not in the business of giving players away. So that's, you know, I think it would obviously take something, I would think, rather significant to make that happen.
Yeah. Irene says, what does San Jose need to do to turn this around? Effort level is confusingly low. Goaltending is bad. Defense gives up too many odd man rushes. They also don't have their first rounder, so they can't be tanking. Do you need a coaching change?
Yeah, well, they're sitting in last place in the Western Conference, and I mean, they are, you know, third to last from the bottom in the league right now. So this is a mess out in San Jose right now. We've talked about it earlier in the year. I mean, I think the roster is much thinner than it's been in the past.
Yeah.
They got some younger guys in there. Their goaltending is subpar. I don't know how else to say it. It's been 2 years in a row. They're below .900 save percentage. That's not good enough. They've been really terrible at 5-on-5 play. If their power play hadn't have been clicking a little bit this first part of the season, I mean, I don't know if they'd have any wins. I mean, they've been really that bad. So, you know, how to fix it? I mean, I guess you could fire Peter DeBoer if you'd like, but I don't know how that's going to rejuvenate, you know, how that's going to make Erik Karlsson, who's just starting a long and a lucrative contract, play any better than he has played thus far. And, you know, this is a team that is in a little bit of a transition, and, you know, they've got 2 40-year-old forwards within their group, too. I mean, you think of Marlowe and Thornton. So, you know, it's a challenge for the San Jose Sharks right now. I don't like the look of their team. I haven't liked the look of their team since the start of the season, and they've got a pretty good schedule coming up. I mean, they started a 6-game homestand on Friday with a really strong performance against the Winnipeg Jets. I think they had over 50 shots, and somehow they lost that game. And the next night, they had a very, you know, subpar effort against the Canucks team that's been really good. And so now they sit here 2 games into a 6-game homestand, 0-2. They play 19, including those 2 games. They have 19 of their 28 games prior to the change of the calendar year, prior to January 1, where they're on home ice. So if they're going to make anything happen, it has to really be now. And I don't have a lot of confidence that they're going to be able to turn it around, because in the end, their goaltending is not there to bail them out. I mean, neither one of these guys has shown me that he's going to be able to play at a higher level, and the team in front of them isn't playing very well. And they've got some older, high-end guys making a lot of money. So, you know, like I said, they can fire the coach if they wish. I don't think Peter DeBoer all of a sudden forgot how to coach. He had him in the Western Conference Final last year. But this is a roster right now that is really, their high-end players are underperforming, and they're not as deep as they've been in the past, and their goaltenders have been bad.
I want to throw this one in as a last one because it's funny. Ozzie said, should the Flames appeal the suspension to have Lucic get 5 games? No, you didn't read that wrong. It might help.
Yeah. Well, somebody brought it up in our meeting things. I've said it in the past. I was like, when a player who is struggling like a Lucic gets a suspension, I mean, like, I always used to say, well, maybe the suspension really should be that they not only have to play, but you have to play him more than 20 minutes.
Right.
Right. That,
yeah.
So you want to really hurt a team you know, you make him do it. And, like, you know, Milan Lucic was a difference maker earlier in his career with the Boston Bruins and helped them win the Stanley Cup. And, you know, he had a really, really good career. But as time has gone on, his game has gotten faster. He has not been able to keep up. And the game has changed. And, you know, unfortunately for everybody involved, he's got a big contract.
Yeah.
It's hard to do anything with. And, I mean, listen, the guy's a competitive SOB, as they say. I mean, but sure. The bottom line is he just can't get there. And so he's just not a helpful player in games. And, you know, the Flames ended up trading for him because they had a guy on their own roster in James Neal that they felt it was a contract that wasn't worthwhile for them. But, I mean, Lucic's contract is a struggle because I believe it runs long enough that he would have to be protected in an expansion draft situation. So play that out over the next couple of years and having to protect a guy like that in
a tough
draft. It's really going to be tough for Brad Tree Living. I think in the end, you know, the James Neal scenario was a signing that at the time I like James Neal. It just seemed like they never really found a spot for him there, and he didn't have a really great year, and then they just decided, oh, we're going to get rid of this contract. They took on a contract that could be worse because James Neal, can, as we've seen, can still play in the league, whereas Lucic, it appears, cannot. So this is going to be a challenge moving forward. He got the suspension the other night, and I would assume that if he keeps playing, he's going to have other incidents like this because it's the only way I think he feels he can impact the game is to be kind of the sheriff out there.
And, right.
That's a league that is no longer that we no longer have. You know, it's not like the 90s when you had those type of players roaming the ice. So it's going to be a challenge for everybody involved when it comes to that. But it's a shame because Lucic was early in his career. He was a really helpful and great competitive player and part of winning teams.
EJ, this was wonderful. That's the only word I can think of. Absolutely wonderful.
That is really kind of you, Don. Kind of you.
All right.
But, hey, it's always a pleasure. And get back to your daily. What do you like tonight? You got any good picks?
I haven't. It's been a hectic morning. I haven't really looked.
Okay.
I've been doing well though. My over unders have been killing it.
Okay, that's good to hear.
I have the over under in the Devil Lightning game at 6.5.
Oh,
I mean the Lightning themselves.
Just laugh at it.
But yeah, you know, you got to be careful though, because you know you get a couple of those 2-1 games, right? So you got to be careful. You got to pick the right one. But I got to take a look at that Penguin Bruin over.
Okay.
I don't know what it is, but that's what I might be leaning towards there, because there might be a lot of goals in that one.
I wish you well.
All right, buddy. I will talk to you next week.
Take care, Don.
All right, that's the great EJ Raddick. Definitely check him out on the NHL Network. NHL Now is the show between 4 and 6 Eastern Time. And, of course, if we didn't get a chance to get to your tweets, we will definitely get to them coming up on Wednesday, because we'll be back on Wednesday. And Wednesday, my special guest will be Leah Hextall, works up in Canada, does a great job, first female play-by-play to call games for ESPN. So she's going to have a chance to join us coming up on Wednesday. Looking forward to talking to her. Had a conversation with her off the air. She's excited about being a contributor to Game Misconduct, so we're looking forward to speaking to her. Of course, not only her work, but her grandfather won a championship with the Rangers, and, of course, her dad, Ron Hextall. So looking forward to talking to her. 4 games tonight, 7 o'clock, Penguins and the Bruins. As I mentioned, Rangers-Senators, I'll be at that one. Predators and the Red Wings in Detroit. And then a battle of the best defensive team against one of the best offensive teams as Edmonton plays host to the Coyotes. So back with you again on Wednesday with Leah. If you want to get in touch with me, at Don LaGreca Game, at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct is the best way to do that. We will talk to you again on Wednesday. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct podcast wherever you get your podcasts.